Well, hey, 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 Pop Culture Quorum Deo. We're back after a long hiatus. This is Jeff Wright. I'm here with my regular co-host, Jared Moore. It's good to be back doing some podcasting with you, Jared. How you doing, man?
Yeah, it's been a while, man. I'm doing well. I'm glad to be back. I miss getting to chat with you about movies. It looks like movies are actually going to start coming out at the theater.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do you think we'll be able to go if we don't have a vaccine passport?
I sure hope so, man.
Yeah. Strange days, man. 2020, 2021, nothing has gotten simpler or easier. You know, we thought 2020, let's get excited when January 2021 rolls around. And no, the Lord was just warming up in 2020, you know. But yeah, it looks like there's some stuff coming out. I remember listening to an interview with the guy who owns Blumhouse during the pandemic. And he said, you know, we have an inventory of movies right now. He said, but there's going to be a donut hole pretty soon that people aren't, you know, they're just not going to be prepared for, where no new movies are coming out. And we've been living in that donut hole for a while. And it looks like certain movies are going to be coming back out again. You know, I'm looking forward to Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus Kong, whichever. That new Justice League cut from Snyder's out. So maybe we are crawling out of that a bit.
Yeah, I saw the Black Widow movie scheduled for this early summer, I think, now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's a movie coming out in a couple days on HBO Max. I can't remember the name of it.
Well, I think Godzilla versus Kong comes out Wednesday.
Oh, that might be. That's what it is.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch that. We've talked to our good friend, Mr. Stephen Burnett, about helping us review that one. So maybe we'll get that on the old podcaster here, too.
Yeah. You might need to bring Turno on, too, for that, because he's seen like every one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really? He's crazy on that stuff.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Marvel movies. We're here to review one of the most recent Marvel products, WandaVision. I wrote something up for our website about that not too long ago, and you've got some interesting thoughts too, so we're going to talk about that on this episode. But before we do that, let's get into our normal segments, and let's start with...
What you watching?
What you watching?
What you watching?
So, buddy, what you been watching?
I've been watching Are You Afraid of the Dark with the kids.
Yeah.
And that's been good. Growing up, man, I was at Cassville Elementary School, and I would check out, like, the old Universal Studios, like Mummy and I think it was a Creature from the Black Lagoon and
Dracula,
Frankenstein's Monster. And it was just for young kids. And I don't know why, but I was drawn to the horror genre specifically when I was a kid. Loved the movie Predator, loved Aliens.
Yep.
All that when I was young. And so, you know, I loved Are You Afraid of the Dark when I was young. Loved Goosebumps. And there was even a Tales from the Crypt Keeper cartoon.
I remember that.
And you go back and it's like all environmental stuff. like if you don't protect, you know, if you don't be a good steward of the environment, it will come back and kill you and your children.
Recycle or you die.
So anyway, but it was good. I mean, I used to love that. And M. Night was supposedly going to redo the Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, it fell through, right?
It did, but man, I would 100% be there for that.
Yeah, yeah. I was optimistic about that too, even though Shyamalan kind of has a, you know, an iffy record.
I'd love to see him get a hold of a miniseries where he has different stories each time.
Yeah.
Because I assume they'll be hit and miss, but he'll have to hit some home runs on a few of them.
Sure. That'll be consistent with his pattern, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've watched the first season of the new Are You Afraid of the Dark? Now, my kids love the old one. I tracked the old one down and have shown them probably the first, like, five seasons of it. They love it. They don't find it particularly scary. But they love watching it, and I've shown my oldest the first season of the new one. You, on your recommendation, I've been meaning forever to watch the second with my older kids, but I haven't done that yet.
I did make the mistake of watching Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark with them all.
Wow.
It was, they went a little overboard on the scary part.
Yeah, I've seen scarier than that movie, but my kids have never seen anything close to that scary. I think one of my sons would be in, like, therapy. I don't know if they would sleep.
Well, they didn't that night, yeah. So it was Amber, when something like that happens, Amber's like, y'all be sure to come wake daddy up. Come wake daddy up when this happens. Because they have a tendency to bypass me. Even though I'm closest to the door, they usually walk around the bed and get, except for my daughter. My daughter always comes and wakes me up.
Yeah.
If she
scared.
Is scared. And dad to protect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sweet. There's something sweet about boys who love their mom and, you know, girls who love their dad.
One time she came in and I guess she thought I was still awake because she'd come downstairs earlier and was, you know, I was still up watching TV and she came downstairs and was scared. So I sent her back to bed. Well, then I go to bed and, you know, I'm out quick. She comes in there and she gets like 2 inches from my face and I wake up and like it like scared me to death, this face in front of me when I woke up.
That's like a rite of passage for parents, man. You know, I remember when that's happened to me too and it just terrifies you. Now, thankfully, we live in an older house where stuff squeaks. And mm-hmm. so like now I've gotten like, oh no, somebody's coming. You know what I mean? But if you're sleeping deep, and the kid, because the kid's afraid to wake you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get as close as they can, you know, and try to figure out how to do this right. And when you wake up, dude, it's terrifying for both of you.
Yeah, they're scarred and you're scarred too.
For sure. Oh, sorry. I guess that might have happened to me in recent days. I don't know. But so that's what you've been primarily watching. You told me that you've watched the new Justice League.
I did. And I think it was excellent. I think it's the best DC movie. Okay. That's out.
Well, I am not a Snyder fan. I've been really clear about that. I'm a fan of the previous Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody that I talk to whose opinion I respect says something good about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm going to have to eat my words at least enough to say Zack Snyder can make a good movie. If not, that he's a good creator. Yeah.
We actually have a good villain besides the Joker in DC.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, do you think, you say now that we have a good villain from DC, do you think Snyder will be invited back? Do you think they'll say?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he will. I think he's here to stay.
Yeah.
Something else I've been watching is the Lois and Clark. I think that's what it's called. Lois and Clark on CW.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. And so far, the villain in it is really compelling.
Yeah. So, a friend of the podcast, Joe Davis, who was on in our archives to talk about Star Wars as an American epic, he told me similar things. He said, you're going to really like that show.
Special effects are really well done.
Yeah. You know, we've talked on here before. One of the reasons we do this podcast is that stories and characters like that really compel our hearts to embrace ideals and a vision for life and whatnot. And so I have been really reserved as we've seen critical theory sort of take over society at the elite levels and start showing up in more pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
I have really been wrestling with what characters do I let my children fall in love with in terms of, you know, the way I love Batman or Superman, because those things can be used against you. You know, Marvel just released a Captain America who's not Steve Rogers, but who is in their continuity, a historic Captain America. And I only read the headline, so I don't know which specific letter, but it's an LGBTQ+ Captain America. And of course they're going to do that, right? Because it's a character they own. They're going to use the character to push their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I've just been like, how do I guard against that? And not just critical theory, but lots of different stuff, sexual revolution stuff, you know, like, how do I help my kids not see those ideas as lovely? Because skilled storytellers use characters we all want to like to tell them it's lovely. And that's been a challenge. But hearing those kind of reports that Justice League is good and Lois and Clark is good make me want to, you know, get a little bit less cautious and jump in.
Yeah, it's interesting that it doesn't make any logical sense because they have LGBT characters.
Yeah.
Why don't they, are they going to make them hetero now?
Right.
You know, it's just.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. There was an earlier move to push inclusion narratives in comics. And so what they did initially, which they may still be doing, is that they would swap out established characters for different genders, different ethnicities, to like, again, say, hey, look how inclusive we are. And they did it in like pretty obvious ham-handed ways, right? So like Thor, who is the son of Odin, became a woman.
Whoa.
Yeah, this has been several years ago. Or Iron Man stopped being Tony Stark. It started being Riri. I can't remember. I think that's right. Riri something. She was a young African-American. And I remember watching that being like, you know, there are great female comic book characters. And there are great African-American comic book characters. Like, think about the Falcon, right? Clearly, people like that character and respond and resonate with it. And I thought, in similar fashion, what you're doing is betraying your own lack of confidence and telling stories about these narratives that you want to highlight, because you're saying they won't get attention on their own. I've got to take characters who don't fit that profile and make them. And so what you're telling me is, it's not me as the consumer who has a problem with this, right? Like, I'm not rejecting stories about a young African-American female protagonist. Mm-hmm. You are, because you're saying, well, I have to stick her in an Iron Man suit for anybody to care. And it probably speaks to how low they think of their audience. You know, like, you guys are such a problem that we have to, like, give you Iron Man, right? But the reality is, though, characters from minorities and whatnot have always done well when they're told well.
Mm-hmm.
And what that plan is, like, to take existing characters to push cultural revolutionary kind of ideas, is you saying you're not confident enough in your ideas that they'll sell on their own. So you've got to attach them to existing tropes that you have, you know, you're using in service to this. You don't have the confidence of your own convictions.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a long sermon. I'll send the outline out through email. Watch anything else? Man, I haven't been watching much of anything. Warm weather came, and I've just been outside. Well, my recreation time, I've been doing stuff with the kids and whatnot. We started the Falcon and Winter Soldier, whatever. And, dude, I just didn't find it compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't even finish the first episode. I'm going to go back to that at some point. But one of my friends who will go unnamed said, this is the weirdest Marvel product, basically, with these characters, because some of the action sequences are incredible. You know, that opening action sequence with the Falcon fighting paramilitary groups, incredible. But he said, beyond those cool set pieces or action pieces, they just sit around and talk about their feelings all the time. And he's like, there's probably an audience for that. I'm not that audience.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want. My interest in Falcon and Bucky is not what's their inner life like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things where you just look and you say, like, you may have mismatched the storyteller with the story, you know, as Marvel hands out products. I don't know anything about, I couldn't name who the director is, but whoever made the choice to think like, well, this should be a character study of the inward life, maybe doesn't understand why we want to watch superheroes,
right? You
know? Well, all right. We'll put a bow on that and move into.
So sorry to interrupt.
And man, the only thing I've got under this heading that I'm interested in is your recent spate of conference appearances.
Yeah, I spoke at the Teaching Them Diligently conference. I did a workshop. And one of my co-authors, Stephen Burnett, actually, his flight was delayed or something happened where he couldn't get there. And the conference had moved his time earlier. And so it was just a perfect storm. So I actually had to fill in for him and speak with like an hour or 2 hour notice.
Yeah.
And so I ended up just talking about sports, like what's the purpose of sports as a form of popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
The talk was originally, what's the purpose of popular culture and why should parents care? So I used sports instead and play. I talked about play. And it went well, and folks were coming up to me afterward and, you know, encouraging me, and a few came and bought the book. And it's funny, though, when I went to St. Louis last weekend to speak at a great homeschool convention conference. And so we're there with Realm Makers, which is a writer's group that has also has kind of a traveling bookstore where they sell distinctly Christian fiction, sci-fi and fantasy. And so anyway, our book is a nonfiction book, but they're permitting it to be there because it's concerning popular culture. And So we're there with the book, and a lady has bought the book. She's at the register, and so we're signing it. So Stephen signed it, and I'm signing it, and another lady's talking to us. So I'm signing this while I'm talking to another lady. Well, I pull down my mask, and I start blowing on it. Like, I step back from the conversation, and I start blowing on the book to so the ink won't smudge, you know. And the lady that we were talking to looks at me like I'm a crazy person. She thought I was smelling the book. She thought I was like, like, and it really freaked her out.
I bet.
So anyway, that blessed my heart.
Yeah.
And made me feel like a huge idiot. but we sold quite a bit of books.
Well, brother, look, I like the new book smell. So
yeah. That's what
I'm sympathetic.
That's what Stephen was telling her. It was funny. We had a good time. I got to talk with a lot of homeschool folks. There are a lot of parents that really need the book. They're really wondering. They're concerned how to navigate. And, you know, the younger ones, folks aren't particularly concerned about yet. It's when they start, kids start getting 11, 12, 13, and they start wanting to break away. And now they're wanting to participate in things the parents have no previous knowledge of, you know?
Yeah.
It's their peers that they're starting to get concerned with. Their peers and what they like and what they're talking about at school or what they're talking about at church. And they're wanting to see these things. And so, and then parents feel overwhelmed because it's funny, a lot of these homeschool folks, I'd ask them how many children's they got. How many children you got? How many children you got? Man, and almost every one of them had at least four.
Yeah.
And so they've got a ton of kids, and if all your kids are reading different books, you don't have time to read every book before they see it, or to,
yeah.
If they're of different ages, I mean, the pop culture's all over the place. And so,
I mean, dude, that's exactly why guarding narratives really, really seems to me an unguarded weakness among evangelicals, because, you know, this is a group of people who are cautious enough to not hand their kids over to the government school to disciple, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Disney is discipling them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I get it. My kids are younger, but, like, we really wrestle with that, too. And, like, the other day we were watching, I say I'm not watching anything else. There's a show on Disney Plus called Gravity Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And it came highly recommended to me. It's a little bit more, like, rude humor than we're used to, but we're enjoying it. It's kind of this, it's like two seasons, and it's just this mystery place that these kids run around in and discover stuff and get up to hijinks. But last night, the episode was about, it started out with the brother telling Mabel she was foolish for believing you had to tell the truth every time. And so basically, the story went where they've got a shady uncle who's up to crazy stuff. Like, he's seen as a con man.
Mm-hmm.
And they work this magic thing on him where he has to tell the truth. And he ends up encountering some cops and telling them about all the, you know, the stuff he's up to. And he's about to go to jail. And so they undo the magic real quick. And when the dust all settles, the grandpa's not, or the grunkle is what they call him. It's, he's not going to have to go to jail because Mabel lied to cover for him. The girl who said, that lying was always wrong, by the end of the episode has to lie to cover her uncle, who's a con man. And the moral of the episode was, and they say this explicitly, sometimes you have to serve the greater good. And so, like, the series has been really good, but my oldest son picked up on that really quick. He's got a sensitive conscience. My other two kids just did not. And we had to, like, man, that sucks, you know, that they would do that with Mabel. And what's a greater good that's being served? That this guy who you love just gets away with terrible stuff. And they made Mabel a morally compromised character at that point, you know. And, like, it's just tough, even at that level, to be so on top of pop culture. And that's before, you know, pop culture is the realm we live and breathe and have our being in some way. I know that that's attributed to God. I'm just saying it's pervasive. And so my oldest son, who's at a Christian school, right? Like, people are paying extra money out of their pocket to have their kids in a Christian school. Two of his best friends in his grade the other day told him he must live under a rock because he didn't know a popular YouTube channel. And he said, I talked to him about it because I was just making sure that that was like jocular joking and not them being mean-spirited. And these are great kids. So it was just like a, let me just double check, you know. And he said, well, yeah, he said, sometimes I get teased about that stuff because like you guys don't give me a phone and whatnot. And my son's not even super close to being a teenager yet. So the assumption in his small world is that he would have access to YouTube through a phone and that he's kind of weird for not. And so we spend a lot of time as a family talking about, like, you're going to have to decide if the way you were raised was super weird because that's what the narrative is going to be. And I try to explain to him why, you know. But I say all that to say when the, you know, among super conservative, careful Christians is, yeah, have a smartphone and YouTube. And the reality is Disney is telling them the greater good is found in lying. I can totally get why a parent feels overwhelmed. Now, for me, you're talking about Realm Makers. That seems like a good reason to be like, you know, while you live at my house, we're going to have like X number of things that we love and watch regularly. And we're just not going to branch out beyond those too much until we have had time to vet them. You know, like my wife wanted our kids to be familiar with the old Michael Landon TV show, Little House on the Prairie. And they didn't initially like it, but when I was like, well, look, this is just one of the options you can watch today when you have some free time, they've come to love it, and they're really invested. Now, my daughter likes the books, but...
my kids have watched, I think, every episode with Granny and Pa.
Yeah.
Dude, some of those episodes, though, are like weighty, dark. Like, there's a rape in one of them. There's unwed pregnancy. There's a lot of...
The one that my kids just got done watching, and we had great conversations coming out of it, was one about a little girl who moves into the community who has one leg shorter than the other. And Michael Landon makes her like a artificial leg to help her play. And her dad's like, no, don't do that to her. And like he has a real sheltering mindset that like, don't try to make things better because she's always going to have this disability. And but he's not presented as an evil man. He's presented as a man who came to the wrong conclusion, loving his daughter. And I mean, there's some great stuff there. But like, I mean, I don't even know what the contemporary version of that is on Disney. You know, that's supposed to be aimed at them. But my youngest daughter loves a PBS show called Pinkalicious, which is just superficial as all get out. And it also has really weird. It just has a weird view of like gender identity and whatnot. Like the little brother runs around following the sister and kind of doing basically everything she wants. And he, and where she's Pinkalicious, he always dresses in purple and colors really matter in that show. And so like my wife and I are like, you know, nothing egregious is here, but we're shaping our daughter's sense of normalcy. And so we probably want more Little House on the Prairie and less Pinkalicious. And, but what that means is you have to get rid of the PBS app, you know? And that's a tough call. Like when the Gravity Falls conversation was over, one of my daughters said, are we going to have to get rid of Disney Plus now? You know, are we going to have to get rid of watching Gravity Falls? Cause they've been through that a couple times where I'm like, you know what? This is just a bridge too far. You guys can watch it when you're an adult if you want to, but it's just not going to be part of our house. And, I mean, you can just tell, like, she likes these characters now. And I don't know if Mabel, I really don't know if my conversation about the greater good is weightier for her than her affections for Mabel. And so now I'm like, well, dang it. and I told him, no, we're not going to quit watching it. If we see more of this stuff, we have to have more, you know, we'll just have to talk it over. But if I saw too much more, Gravity Falls would go.
Sure.
And I'd rather my kids grow up and say, Dad, you were a psychopath about what we could watch. Than I would that Disney gets to disciple them. You know?
Yeah, my man. Yeah, I mean, you just some of the families I talked to at these conferences just told them you're doing the best you can. Like, do the best you can and rest in Christ. Because with our kids, you know, I just assume. I also told them that in one of my talks, I said I just assume that I'm messing my children up. The question is not if, but how much. And so I rest in Christ, because all you can do is your best, and you enjoy the fact that, you know, God is a better father than I am.
Yeah, amen.
And I find great comfort in that, because I'm ultimately stewarding His children. You know, He is the creator of all things, and his image bearers are his children in one general sense. But we're stewarding them in hopes and trust that they'll be his children eternally.
Amen, brother. From your lips to God's ears, and let it be so. Let all the children of the redeemed be redeemed themselves. That's the tough nut about the toxic secularism we're living in right now, is that they very intentionally can't reproduce themselves. Mm-hmm. And by the various choices they're making, voluntarily, you know, but being barren is one. Some of the, you know, in vogue transgender stuff leaves people sterile. You know, apart from pretty complicated, expensive, and sophisticated medical intervention, gay and lesbian couples can't reproduce. They can adopt, but, you know, they can't reproduce. And so Christians are the only people reproducing, but we have to stop feeding them into a secular system, like to have babies to be discipled by the secularists, to think like they do. We have to raise our children, like you just said, to love the Lord and to reject those things. And a lot of that means, you know, making careful decisions. And a lot of that is saying, I've made the decisions the best I can. Will your gospel be sufficient for my ears? And there's good hope to think that it will be.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, okay, man. So you're now a famous conference speaker. Do we still get to hang out?
Yeah.
Okay.
All time, man.
You won't forget the little people now that you're big and famous?
I'm not anywhere near any of that. I'm big and famous among the homeschool community.
What? So did you attend any of the breakout sessions or anything else there?
I didn't. I was working the bookstore.
Yeah.
You know, so I was trying to help Realm Makers, and they did really well. They did the best they'd ever done in Nashville.
Yeah. We don't homeschool. You know, that may be coming with the Equality Act. You know, that I worry if private Christian schools are going to survive that by and large. Mm-hmm. But we may start. And all my friends, I have a ton of friends in the homeschool community, and they all go to teach them diligently and love it. You know, they always think super highly of it. Mm-hmm. So you can't recommend that. Well, listener, if anything we have talked about here provoked your interest about how stories shape the moral imagination and character and sense of normalcy in the world, we have an updated website, pccdpod.com. We put some work in to get that thing straightened up and more accessible. And so there's an article on there called Disney Princesses and the Moral Imagination of Children. Disney Princesses and the Moral Imagination of Children. I wish more people read that article and considered it carefully, because it gets into some of this. Like, you know, it's easy to say with daughters, Elsa is teaching my daughters something about what is lovely and beautiful and desirable. They love her. I suspect at some point Elsa will be in an alternative sexual lifestyle. How do we account for that? How do we strategize for that when that's coming? And why does that stuff matter? That's all in Disney Princesses and Moral Imagination. And it ports easy over to Captain America and other things like that. So, listener, if you're interested in reading more, give that a read. And if you don't care, share it around. It's a piece on our website I wish got more traction. Mm. Well, speaking of moral imaginations, we're looking at one of the biggest new productions that have come since the coronavirus quarantine first went in. And so you want to get into that review?
I'm ready, buddy.
All right, man. So, guys, you're listening to us talk about WandaVision, the Disney Plus series that was recently completed. And we're going to give you the IMDb summary. And once we get done doing that, we will get into specific elements of the film. And so consider yourself warned that spoiler territory is approaching fast after we give this summary. And Jared, I'm going to read to you the IMDb summary, and you tell me what it does not get right. So WandaVision, according to IMDb, two superpower beings living their ideal suburban lives begin to suspect that everything is not as it seems.
That's very, you know, it doesn't really give away anything.
Yeah, for sure. Pretty protected.
But it's accurate.
No spoiler, you know, no spoiler there. So there's no adjustments you would make then?
No.
Okay. Well, let's get into it then. You want to talk about the world of WandaVision and where we see creational goodness?
Yeah, it's a beautiful world. I mean, it's kind of an idealistic suburban world based on, I think it starts in the 50s. And it, you know, it's kind of the ideal 50s suburban life.
Right.
And, you know, there's kind of quirky comedy And it was kind of that mentality that a wife can do anything and look good while doing it type thing, you know, like yeah,
the Donna Reed sort of deal.
Yeah. And it's a world I'm not real familiar with.
Yeah. It would have been Nick at Night stuff when we were growing up, mm-hmm. stuff from the 50s and maybe early 60s, but stuff that was already seen as kind of dated by the time we were watching pop culture as kids.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like I found it charming. You know, I wasn't annoyed by it at all, but I gave it time because I didn't really know what was going on. Mm-hmm. You knew something was going on. Something ain't right here.
Yeah.
But the previews were so strange for it leading up to it. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to watch it, but we gave it a shot because it's Marvel and Disney. And it's a very unique story. It's it's a fun world. At least it starts out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize that it's more sinister as it goes on. You know, but the acting is beautiful. Acting's excellent. The characters make you feel, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how you know it's good is when they're able to make you feel, I believe, through reason, you know, she should be sorrowful. He should be. Vision should be sorrowful. And when you recognize, if you've lost any loved ones or people you love and you know how they feel. And so I just thought the acting was really well done and the storytelling was really good.
Yeah, it's really well told. I will tell you that I am in a cynical place about major pop culture production right now. And so one of the things that I find interesting about WandaVision that is creationally good is that by going through the different eras of sitcoms, mm-hmm. they kind of note that there is something durable about the traditional nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
And that every era has a version of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I could recognize the updates, right? The Donna Reed version, the Brady Bunch version,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't think there was a Wonder Years version. Maybe there was, but then you get into more, by the time things start breaking down, it's closer to 90s and 2000s where it's sort of, reality style where there's people confessing to the camera and having private conversations with the camera about other stuff that is being recorded. And they're acknowledging that there is something, again, durable about the traditional family, that we continue returning to those stories. But because Wanda has created an artificial world, I'm also wondering if their writers don't want us to think of that as as illusory, that this thing that we have in a mind of the traditional family, particularly living in the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
that is not illusory and something that is giving away in the modern day, you know.
Hmm.
This, the moral vision of WandaVision is really internally confused. I don't even think they know exactly what they want us to think about who's good and who's bad, or if there is even such a thing. And it makes me wonder if even the setup where they sort of have to acknowledge the real world that it's just forever going to be that men live with women and have children and try to build a life together. You know, men live with women, have kids, want the best for them and themselves, right? They want to create a peaceful home from which to move into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if they're trying to subvert that a little bit by the mechanics of the WandaVision world.
Mm-hmm. You know? Maybe.
Vision also in this movie is, or in this series, is an interesting character that I think deserves highlighting.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some ways, I think Vision represents someone who can't escape the natural law. Vision is living in a world he's very happy with, right? But he senses that something's not right. And he keeps trying to get to the bottom of it. You know, he's like the inquiring pagan or the person who picks up on the natural law and says, I've got to figure out what's going here because something's off.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that. I thought that was sort of a smuggling in of something good that they might not even been aware. But just his persistent idea that something's not right here and I need to get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you root that in? You know?
Sure.
And he's an artificial life form, but he's also supposed to be very human. And you know, thankfully, the natural law does exist, and it does call us to behold it. We can suppress the truth and unrighteousness to powerful degrees, but there's also something about the natural law that continues to bubble up and is irrepressible. And so I find Vision an interesting sort of presentation of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, postmodernism can't do away with the natural law entirely.
Right, right. It can create structures to try to deny it and give you a lot of convenience and distraction. But mm-hmm. again, Jay Bujaszewski called it what you can't not know. And what you can't not know continues to bubble up, no matter what kind of social engineering and you know whatnot that you get into.
Mm.
So you want to talk about fallenness here?
Well, the third question is good and in that.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll go through. Sorry, got a little out of order here. So bring up that third question.
Yeah, the what is good, true, and beautiful, common yeah. grace. I think Wanda loves Vision. I think that is a positive. Wife yep. loving her husband.
Yep.
Like you said, the nuclear family, husband, wife, children are portrayed positively. It also rightly shows us how to deal with grief.
Pardon me. I thought I had that muted. Cameo for my cell phone.
I think it shows us how to rightly deal with grief, that if you deal with your grief in a sinful way, that you harm others, you harm the living, you harm innocent folks. And so she essentially turned her grief inward instead of dealing with her grief. And I do think that they present a false way to deal with grief, but the reality that I do agree that you can't turn it inward. You can't be selfish. And I think that it's rejecting selfish grief or hmm. grief turning inward because that's why she's controlling everyone. That's why she's forcing everyone to... Well, remove her own grief, essentially,
right.
or to treat her. You know, she's forcing everybody to live in her reality, which is a reality that's not real.
Yeah.
You know, creating a false reality that everything is okay is not how you heal from grief and suffering. And I think that this TV show is correct in that. I also think it's correct by using Agnes. It uses Agnes to kind of reveal the Scarlet Witch, the Wanda. Mm-hmm. You know, she absorbs everyone's power, uses everybody's power for her bidding, eventually kills folks that she drains. Wanda wasn't killing folks, but she was essentially doing the same thing. And in one of those episodes, Agnes is kind of is rebuking her, basically saying, "You're just like me." And it's almost like a David and Nathan moment where Nathan tells that story and David realizes that he's talking about him. You know, David condemns the greedy owner in the story and he's condemning himself and doesn't even realize it, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's an interesting comparison.
That's similar to what Agnes, I think, is doing. And it wakes Wanda up, but then fallenness, they argue that the way to heal from this grief is to basically be selfless, do good to others, benefit society type thing.
Hmm.
And I don't think that's the answer.
Yeah, I mean... I hear what you're saying there, and I find that a compelling read. But I just feel like the moral world of WandaVision is, I mean, this is such a perfect illustration of the moral confusion of our day. I don't think they realize it, but they have given us a perfect summary of how messed up our moral world is
mm-hmm.
In the West. Because, I mean, I wrote about this at length, and so, listener, you can go find the most recent piece on our website. It's called We All Live in WandaVision Now.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world where the most powerful people on earth insist that we live according to their preferences, even if it's contrary to reality. You know, you can't read books, according to Amazon, that would offer any kind of critique of the modern transgender movement. Amazon says that is by definition transphobic and we will not sell that.
Yeah, even if they're quoting John Hopkins doctors.
Exactly. And, yeah. Right. There's no diversity of opinion on public policy towards coronavirus. There's no diversity of opinion on, you know, public policy on the natural family. It has to be the way the most powerful people in society insist, even though it's done, you know, we say things like we live in a republic and all that. These private companies, are able, you know, they've become the size of nations.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they have the kind of power that we've never seen before, and they use it to insist that we live the way they want, even if it's out of step with reality. And it's, I mean, short of being able to do what Wanda did or what Orwell saw in 1984, which with like, you know, your Amazon Alexa, he would have never dreamed that we'd have that kind of thing. You know, these companies are doing what Wanda did. But we're also supposed to be sympathetic to Wanda. You know, she is dominating these people in a way that we see the trauma of what she's done to them several times. And yet we're supposed to be sympathetic to her, right? Which I mean, I really don't know how to get my head around. Like, this is one of the most monstrous things that's ever been done in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's basically Thanos and then Wanda, you know. Now, Thanos is worse, global, you know, cosmic scale, but like, this is the second thing, you know, worse than Ultron in some ways. And so we're supposed to be sympathetic to her, but she's also destroying people.
She's removed the will from them. She's essentially taken their will from
them. Their individual dignity and their self-determination. I mean, rape doesn't even, you know, get to it. So she's this monster and maybe the protagonist. And the whole series is built on she has created an artificial reality, right? So there's this reality that's outside. The people who want to get into it, some of them want, like, to help her. But the others are just wanting to impose their own will, right? So they go and recreate Vision or whatever. They're bad guys, too. The bad guy who shows up is sort of a dark mirror image. I say dark mirror image. I just mean that, like, she's a witch as well. She literally wears darker clothes. She's a parallel to Wanda, but she has an appropriate critique of Wanda. And then, you know, Monica Rambeau, who is trying to penetrate WandaVision to help Wanda. You know, again, this is modern culture. As soon as you break the narrative, you're expelled. So she breaks Wanda's narrative and you're driven from society. You know, you don't get to use Twitter or you don't get to have your book published. Ryan Anderson's When Harry Becomes Sally. You just don't get, it doesn't get to be acknowledged anymore. Dr. Seuss maybe is going through something like this. But when Monica is able to confront Wanda, the phrase shows up twice in the series, I could tell. She talks to her about your truth and my truth. And so we're clearly in a world of a subjective reality where a woman is imposing her subjective reality on other people. And the only resource that Disney has to put in the mouth of someone who wants to confront this is to say, lean into subjectivity.
Mm-hmm. Postmodernism, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it just tells you how desperate a spot they are philosophically.
They long for absolute morality.
Yep.
But refuse to.
Yep. They know there's a creator and refuse to acknowledge him as such, you know. And it's, again, they have given us the most apt metaphor for the moral confusion of our day. And then just how powerful people dominate the less powerful. You know, by the time the series is over, Wanda's supposed to have come to this cathartic dealing with her grief. But clearly the townspeople, rightly, look at her like a monster. And so, like, she flies off and she's, you know, I think now in the taxonomy of Marvel Cinematic Universe, Captain Marvel is the most powerful character. I think Wanda's now second. Both were implied to be able to deal with Thanos if, you know, either had been off planet or hadn't got taken out by, you know, a tactic. So you've got the most powerful person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or the second, who has become a moral monster and people are going to suspect and hate, right? And she flies off like a strong, independent woman going her own way. And I'm like, that dangling hook is going to be impossible for y'all to tie back up, you know? And you know, it just gets worse and worse because the whole thing is built on moral relativism, even though we're supposed to feel something morally about what's happening. And the last thing I would just highlight here is that Wanda justifies her actions in the name of trauma. And that is the narrative that dominates all the social reengineering that's happening now. You know, these long established morals have to be reengineered and rejiggered. Because someone out there feels sad about something that was done to them or something that was done to someone else. And I don't deny in the least that really traumatic, tragic things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that it justifies imposing your trauma on everyone else is morally bankrupt, as, you know, name the wickedness, right?
That mm-hmm.
everyone has to live in light of my trauma is just as wicked as what Wanda did. But that's literally the narrative that's changing society right now,
or mm-hmm.
attempting to, you know, making headway doing it. I think it will eventually crumble, maybe not in my lifetime, but in the light of eternity eventually. But like right now, it's remaking society. And mm-hmm. they just gave it to us on a platter. It's like a parable of our times. And you look at that and you're like, oh, the Lord is really in control because he made them give us this narrative.
Amen. So the idol in the show, my understanding is that the way to deal with grief is to be selfless or exalt others above oneself, which is just another form of self-righteousness when you eliminate God, mm-hmm. right? When you're not doing it for his glory. Because, as you said, there's no reason why Wanda should not impose her trauma on others. You know, she's hurting. Hurt people type thing.
And she has the power to do it.
Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't she do it?
Yep.
Well, because it's bad. <You know? laughs> Because it's bad. Because now she's understanding how other people are feeling, and she doesn't want to do that. But the thing is, like, if exalting others above yourself is the answer to healing from your own grief and suffering, what happens when you are in a position where you cannot exalt others above yourself? You know, like, it's almost like you got to benefit others in order to heal. But what if you can't benefit others? What if you're in a position like my mom's in the nursing home right now and can't really benefit others, right? Not at least in this superhero fashion, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like benefit others as far as vocation and service or volunteering or something along those lines, you know.
Yeah, would be a better approach.
Well, that seems to be what the movie's arguing or what the TV show's arguing to me is that you got to benefit others. And when you eliminate God from the process, it just becomes another form of being selfish. I'm going to help you because it heals me, mm-hmm. type thing. And I don't think that that's truly healing. I think that's just using other people for your own benefit.
Gosh, man, I mean, you're right, but I see this as sort of, I mean, really, it's a cultural thing too. Nietzsche is ascendant right now. That when there's no transcendent moral order, right? Mm-hmm. There's no God above us. God is dead, to use Nietzsche's language. Nietzsche would say reality or life and reality have no meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the job for us is to create meaning. And he posits this creation of the overman, the man who has mastered all his failings and has developed his personal power to the greatest degree. And so that overman will give meaning to a meaningless reality by his personal power. And Wanda's the overman.
Hmm.
But she has the will to power to dominate others and does so. And so, like, I just look at this and I'm like, I wish I thought they could rise to the level of, rather than dominating others in your grief, you should be charitable and serve others. I didn't think they can get there. Mm-hmm. I think they have gotten to a place where, like, well, the powerful get to impose their will. And if there are consequences from that, well, that's just how, you know, there's just going to have to be animosity between people. And, you know, the powerful person who did it to everyone gets to fly off because she's the overman. And these people are left to pick up the rubble of their lives because they're not the overman.
Hmm.
It is truly dystopian in that sense.
And the gospel is so much better.
Oh, gosh.
God's glory gives meaning and value not only in salvation, but also in our trauma, our grief, our suffering, that there's a good purpose for it. You know, Romans 8:28, that all things work together for good for those that love God, those that are called according to his purpose. You know, there's great freedom in being a Christian because you know the one who knows why. You know, I try to encourage folks who are suffering and loved ones have passed and difficult circumstances that it's freeing being a Christian because we think if we just had more knowledge, we would be able to handle the situations and the suffering. You know, if I just knew why my dad died 7 years ago, you know, if I just knew why he was taken then and isn't with me today, then I would somehow be able to heal better. I would be good with it or understand better. But if God isn't enough, then he's not enough. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're God giving you that knowledge when he's already given you himself through Christ, literally united you to Christ in the power of the Holy Spirit, so much so that God calls you his child. He calls you a joint heir with his son. He says that you're the living temple of God. Like, all the language about us and that union with Him. And if that's not enough, more knowledge isn't going to be enough.
Yeah.
You know, God surpasses all the things that we desire in giving us Himself. And so ultimately it boils down to sin. But God's glory gives meaning to these things. There's a reason why, and we'll understand it one day, or we won't. We will understand God enough then that we won't be concerned about that knowledge. Mm. Like, the Lord will truly be enough to us, not because He has changed, but because we've been perfected.
Yeah.
And so I find great comfort in knowing the One who knows why. And, you know, don't misunderstand me. I want to know the future. I want to know what my children are going to do. How can I prevent them from doing certain things? How do I keep them safe? How do I keep them from their own hearts? You know, what formula can I use to make sure that they're going to grow up and be faithful Christians and be good husbands and mothers and be protected from the evil of the world? And
not
all
live
those
in
things.
WandaVision.
Yeah, yeah. How can I guarantee that? I want all those things. And I feel like if I knew the future, I could do that. But God hasn't granted us to know the future, you know? Even when you look at the prophecies, they were many times somewhat ambiguous, I think, to spur those folks to have to depend on God, to have to cling to Him, to trust Yahweh.
Well, and we just don't have the frame to bear knowledge of the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we definitely want, but it's, you know, we couldn't bear to know it. We would, you know, 'cause there would be tragedy. And Jesus is very clear to tell us, you're repeating the Bible, don't fear, right? Mm-hmm. But He also says things like, each day has enough worry of its own. He knows how we relate to the future. We tend to worry about it. We realize we're in a fallen world, we're fallen creatures. That stuff plays out in life. And so He says, look, you can't, nobody gets to know how the story's going to go other than what He's chosen to reveal. But don't worry about that. There's enough here to focus on today. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He knows our frame and knows what we're capable of.
Amen. And I think the answer to dealing with grief and suffering is you weep in hope. You, I think that's what Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's so in such agony that His sweat drops became His blood. Mm-hmm. And even though He's that anxious about drinking His Father's wrath, the cup of His Father's wrath, He nevertheless says, not my will, but yours be done. He starts with, in Luke 22:42, if you're willing, let this cup pass from me. Not my will, yours be done. I think Luke just summarizes the whole narrative, you know, the whole history of it in that one verse. And, you know, Jesus was committing Himself to God. And I think that that's the answer to our grief, is that we just commit ourselves to God. You know, Lord, I don't want you to take my father from me. I don't want you to take my kids from me. I don't want you to take my wife, my job. You know, I don't want these things to happen. But not my will, but yours be done. And that's where comfort comes from. That's where healing comes from. It's ultimately a personal relationship with God through Christ by the Spirit. And, you know, I don't want to diminish, let me just say this caveat, I don't want to diminish people's hurting and suffering. But if you think you're going to find a better answer than God to deal with these things, well, you've been deceived. And, you know, you're as deceived as Wanda is in this show. And so I want to encourage you, you run to the Lord. You run to the Lord and you run to Him continually. And, you know, God and others, your two greatest commandments, that's what you run to.
Yeah.
And where you fail, you rest. See, something else that I found freeing is that Jesus has grieved perfectly in my stead.
Mm-hmm.
And so He has suffered perfectly in my stead without sin.
Yeah.
And so as I labor to suffer like Him in a way that honors God, the way that loves God, I know I'm falling short of that. And what happens when I fall short? Well, my hope is not in how well I suffer or how godly I am when I suffer or how well I deal with grief, but how well Christ has for me. And out of that, you know, I seek to grieve like Him, to walk in Him.
Yeah.
And so I just find being a Christian incredibly freeing, you know. I know folks can get bogged down on their own sin, but, you know, I think folks should only get bogged down in their own sin if they don't have a Savior.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what stands out to me about the world of WandaVision. It's how much better the Christian narrative is. And, you know, the better narrative only depends if one narrative is true. You know what I mean? Or which narrative most corresponds to what's true. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that really is the battle of the moment, to remember what's true, to live in light of what's true. You know, the breakneck pace in which postmodernism has taken our people, you know, our neighbors over a cliff, even the church over a cliff into subjectivity is still stunning to me as a guy who's lived through it, you know. But in WandaVision, there's no sense of why objective reality exists and should be honored. Christians know why. There's a God who is ultimate reality, and he insists on being honored, in fact. Yes, in a fallen world, he uses tragedy for his purposes, right? Mm-hmm. But they have no better protection against tragedy. They know that tragedy happens. So it's not like we're being like, well, you just got to deal with it. People are getting hurt, because our God uses tragedy for his purposes. Mm-hmm. So we know that there is a purpose, because we've seen the most tragic thing in history revealed as incredibly beneficial and purposeful, right? Jesus died on the cross. Mm-hmm. He rose from the dead. Satan was driven out. The power of a broken world was ended. He reigns now and will surely appear. And like, we know all this because he rose from the dead, mm-hmm. as an expression of objective reality. So I can't tell you why your dad died 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you why that specific suffering happened, but I have a general confidence that it happened under God's providential care and guidance and supervision of the universe, and that it was not arbitrary and meaningless. Mm-hmm. And that actually gives me hope to carry on, mm-hmm. that there's someone who's in control. He's good. He's bringing everything to a good purpose, and we need to therefore carry on. And WandaVision has none of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't even know who to tell you who the good guy is. It just tells you, you probably ought to root for this person. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, really the way that WandaVision tries to make us support Wanda is by just giving us an even more villainous version of her. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing it can tell you is, like, she's not Harkness, so root for her. Vision loves her. He's a good man. Root for her. And, man, I just came away being like, this is so dissatisfying and honestly corrupt. And, man, it really does make the beauty of the gospel stand out, you know, for those who have eyes to see it, who are willing to see it, who don't insist that they live in WandaVision too. You know, the only thing that would make this story a more apt metaphor, I put this in the piece I wrote, is if once WandaVision got turned off, a bunch of the citizens asked for it to be turned back on because they prefer it to their real life. And I think that's where we're living right now. There's some people who want the artificial reality turned back on. They want to escape into artificial reality. Seriously, the transhumanists want artificial reality to supplant natural law, and they have the means to do some of that now. And so this battle is not going to get colder. This battle is going to get hotter. And I trust the Lord to do what's right and good, but I hope he will quickly send in reinforcements to those who want to live in the world as he made it and not pretend like it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Yep. All right.
It's amazing getting to, this is one thing, like with these parents, I hope we can get through to parents and say, look, because just what you said, pop culture, and it seems it's getting better and better, or better and better at providing the antithesis of why the gospel is so beautiful, why mm-hmm. the word of God is so beautiful. I mean, just an objective book to tell us what is right and wrong. I mean, how amazing that is today, yeah. You know? Like, yeah. I don't have to turn on the news and wait for an extra letter to be added to the LGBTQ, you know, to know what is socially acceptable now, like or what is good. Mm-hmm. Or which gender, or which, I mean, I don't have to wait for some
study,
some pagan, yeah, to tell me, you know, what a human being is, or what a boy is, or what a girl is, or what, I mean, any of that. All of that is clearly written down in Scripture. And not only that, but there are in samples in history of folks who tried to follow contrary to this, and this is what happened to them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to even... I don't even have to go in rebellion against the Lord with these other ideas to see, well, maybe it'll work for me. You know, I mean, it's just the Lord has been good to us, man.
He has been. He has been. And meditating on that and cultivating that in your homes, you know, I hate the phrase now more than ever, but I think it is a priority now in a way that it wasn't when I was 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. The seeds were there now, and I see the way it was pulling. But, like, even the stuff with WandaVision, it is really subversive. Mm-hmm. You know, I've taken the very cynical, subversive read on this. I think there's good reason to. We have the narratives of the social reengineer people. We know about the transhumanists in Silicon Valley who want to wed us to tech and make us cyborgs, you know, and see that as a way to, like, advance the human race. One of the things that is on my mind, just as a last thought, at some point, my family's going to disconnect from Disney Plus and from Disney. And it, you know, the first wave of it is going to be the kind of culture war stuff. You know, what's a boy, what's a girl, what's a marriage, you know, things like that. But they've got a lot further reach in mind. There's a short, actually, on Disney Plus right now. My kids love to watch the Disney shorts. Mm-hmm. And there's a short now called Out about, you know, ultimately the story is a mom finally comes to grips, I think, with her son being gay.
And, oh, my goodness.
And affirms it, you know. And so, like, eventually I'm going to disconnect with them over the culture war stuff. But I've got to give them a vision of the beauty of the world as God made it, you know, and guard them against these powerful, illusory counterfeits that would say, doesn't this look cool? Isn't this woman empowered? Isn't this, you know, doesn't this look progressively wonderful? And we, you know, I've thought, like, maybe one of our segments should change from what you're watching to what you're reading. Because, like, I'm assuming someday I'll have to give up Luke Skywalker, who's a character I've loved forever, because Luke will be bent to purposes that I can't, you know, endorse. And so what stories do you give your kids to love? You know, one of the things about Luke is that he teaches me to always believe redemption's possible, right? He's willing to even die to try to redeem his father. Well, he helped me see that, right, and love that story. But when they start using him for evil ends, he's got to go.
Yeah.
So Realm Makers, you know, I might not be able to have Disney Plus, but Realm Makers, Tolkien, those things are going to be more and more important.
Man, I had a mother come up to me at one of these. I can't remember which place. I think it was Nashville. But she was just asking me, talking to me about her daughter, 9 years old, and had asked questions like, how do we know God exists? Well, maybe he doesn't, all these things. Well, she ended up becoming a Christian a few years later. But she was asking kind of how to combat that, and I was encouraging her to use catechesis, you know, to where, I mean, Christians have used that for years and years and years. I think there's got to be more and more of that to where we are helping. You know, I know some Christians don't like the term inoculate, right? But we are there. I think inoculate is a good thing, so long as we're not viewing popular culture as totally trying to destroy our kids or something like that, but that there are nuggets of destruction in there for a reason, right?
Or I would even say powerful fountains.
Yeah.
We just have to know which fountain to drink at.
And so we want to inoculate them, our children, against lies wherever they're found. Like, we're encouraging them to enjoy God's truth wherever it's found. We need to help them reject the lies wherever they're found. And one amazing way you can do that, and way Christians have done that through history, is catechism, to where you train the thought patterns of your children, essentially.
Yeah.
And Disney's
give them
already
a default setting.
Yes, 100%. And this lady actually was married to Presbyterian. She was Southern Baptist. And I suggested just use the Westminster Confession, the shorter catechism.
Yeah.
And that would be beneficial. I told her, like, with my kids, man, on the way to school, we're using the Second London, and it takes them like 5 minutes to go through it. And because we're doing like 5 questions each week.
Yeah.
And the next week we add 3 more to it, and we just, until we work through the whole thing, and they're doing like 60 something in a year. And, but their memories are like still traps, man. They just, so anyway, that, and then, and singing truth, and,
living with Christians,
enjoying. And that's a big thing that we argue in our book. I think the best way to to combat this LGBT stuff is to celebrate manhood, celebrate womanhood, celebrate marriage.
And the blessing of babies.
Yeah, like all those things, man. Like celebrate family.
Yeah.
Like this is a wonderful thing that the Lord has given us. And yeah. Isn't God's design beautiful and amazing? And, you know.
I know we went long already, but we're tracking here too. Now, the thing maybe I would say to a parent like that is not to treat that question as scary. That kind of question has to happen for a thinking Christian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have to think, how can I know God exists? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe you don't know the best answer off the top of your head, but live in confidence that the answer exists and go find it, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, with the way certain books are being memory-holed, maybe we need to start stockpiling digital copies of stuff and physical copies of stuff. That's true. But nonetheless, right now, we can go find the good answer. And so that question is not intimidating. It's a natural sign of progress, right? Mm-hmm. Any kind of faith-seeking understanding we should celebrate and not be intimidated by. So, you know, if it's William Lane Craig or it's Sean McDowell now, I guess, mm-hmm. go get those good answers for that. But everything you just said, I affirm too. Like, give them a good default, which is why earlier I mentioned we're probably going to cut out Pinkalicious because I'm not sure it's a good default, mm-hmm. you know. But the other thing I want to encourage people to do, and this has been something that has occurred to me lately, I'm kind of becoming an agrarian, but I would encourage people as much as possible to get their kids involved in common grace expressions of natural law. So, for instance, mm-hmm. get a seed and place it in a potting soil, give it water and light, and watch it grow. And honestly, maybe also get this, you know, a sister seed, put it in sand, keep it in the dark, water it with vinegar, and let your kid see that there's one set of conditions where the plant will grow, and there's another where it won't. And do it as a science experiment and show them that there's a natural law that governs reality. It's unavoidable, you know. Mm-hmm. I think some of that agrarian stuff of like, well, how would those two, you know, if we wanted to have ponies, what would have to happen between those two horses to have a pony? And I realize not everybody's ready for sexual reproduction, but like, is there anything other than sexual reproduction that could give us another pony here? And then like, would it be better for us to grow them in a test tube or genetically modify them? And what does that mean about what we think we are, you know, are we now sovereign over those things? Is that really something we can look around at people and say, yeah, we're qualified to adjust horses? You know, like those kind of questions, that kind of natural law stuff, I think parents should be leaning into because people want us to live in a false reality. Mm. All right, man. Well, again, I'm kind of in a dark place with some of this. I hope some of this has been helpful and hopeful, really. Because the gospel really is better, and the world built on the gospel is better, which is increasingly easy to see. Jared, where can people find your work?
You can find me on Twitter, Jared H. Moore. You can also find my book, The Pop Culture Parent, Helping Kids Engage the World for Christ, on Amazon or ChristianBook.com, wherever you buy your books. I want to encourage you to pick that up, and help you apply a lot of the principles that we apply in this show. But we hope that it encourages you. Keep loving your children. Keep spending time with them.
You're here. I am currently taking a hard look at my life online, and so I'm not at this moment currently on social media. But the show is PCCDPod on most social media platforms. We'd love to have you connect with us there, and we'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback here. So, guys, until the next episode, which hopefully won't be quite as long as it has been since the most recent, I'm Jeff Wright for Jared Moore, telling you to live every moment as if you are before the face of God.
Because you are.
We'll talk to you next time.